number six for today, which is Griffin versus Bennett, case number 06-12-83. Mr. Nunnery.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Nelson. First and foremost, there are certain matters I want to put in perspective for the court. One, there is nothing in this record whereby of any evidence that Mr. Griffin ever used drugs in the workplace. And I want to cite in the record the affidavit, of course, of Griffin at page 42. So where did you get any knowledge that he ever used drugs in the workplace? My knowledge was based on that he had just recently smoked marijuana. In the context of this case, this all started with the notion that somehow he was under suspicion. But looking at this record in totality, there is nothing that he used drugs in the workplace.
But he was, that's not the reason relied on. It's that he failed the drug test.
I understand. Secondly, I want to highlight to the court the context of the testimony and how it came into this record. One, the deposition of Mr. Dale Grave was taken first. Ms. Colgan was taken second. And also in the depositions, there was the affidavits explored. We believe, consistent with Staples and the Laudermill Gilbert holdings, of the critical elements in this case, one, the notice of hearing. First of all, as this train left the station, this was always couched as the 27th meeting, a disciplinary meeting. It was never couched in terms of a pre-termination hearing as defined under Laudermill and Griffin.
Now, when he went into the meeting, he was aware that he had flunked the drug test.
He was aware, so
his job was on the line.
He was aware solely of flunking the drug test. And what I think is disingenuous, it wants to say, they want to somewhat weaken Laudermill. They want to impute knowledge, in particular based upon proposed findings of fact, that he knew when he came into the hearing that he was coming in, and this is proposed findings of fact 25, he came in, as far as the drug test, he knew he was going to be suspended or he was going to be fired. So they're saying, well, he knew why he came in there. He still does not get any notice of the real reason why he came in there until the early morning.
And was that when he decided to have union representatives come with him?
Well, the union representatives had been called as well.
He called them, right, to accompany him.
I think the record is unclear. I also think that the county called the union. The call comes in within an hour. He goes there within an hour. We do not believe that because he knew something was going to happen to him, ends the inquiry.
So then the record indicates that he conferred privately with three union reps who later accompanied him to the meeting, but it's not clear how they contacted him. Is that
But
what
clearly, saying? I think the record is also clear that that communications occurred at the meeting, on the morning of the meeting. It wasn't anything prior to the meeting. The more important point in this record is the major credibility issue. And with respect to the credibility issue, it seems logical that all of this ought to be based upon some factual basis. And there are three serious credibility flaws in all of this.
And in terms of credibility, though, how does credibility speak to him flunking the drug test? Because that, was there going to be a challenge that the test was given in properly or incorrectly or misread?
Or the credibility goes that you ought to assert from day one that there is a factual basis for the charge. Credibility-wise, Mr. Delgrave knew that he had never used drugs in the workplace, and they wanted to equate flunking of the drug test with using drug in the workplace. Look at Appendix 22 and 23. The charge is that he used drugs in the workplace. And clearly, if one were to look at the proposed findings of fact regarding 95 to 106, or the proposed findings of fact regarding the KT matter, there was never any discussion in the KT discussions regarding using drugs in the workplace. That is, I'm sorry, proposed findings of fact 63 through 81.
Let me ask you about this whole workplace thing, though. What? Got a juvenile correctional institution, and I would assume they would want all of their employees to be drug-free. Your emphasis on whether he used drugs in the workplace as opposed to going home, I don't know how that really...
It is very significant because in this record, Ms. Culkin clearly states, we have done this before. There have been others who have used drugs and who were not fired. But what it is, the use of drugs in the workplace, connecting it to the workplace, is a lie. And there is no evidence in the record of that. If you are going to bring him in...
Wait, are you saying that there's evidence in this record that other employees had positive drug tests and were... did not lose their job?
Absolutely.
Where are they? Who?
It's in her testimony, her deposition testimony.
From you, from your witness?
From her witness. She testifies under oath, Ms. Culkin. That is in the record. But
how many people tested positive? And these are people who tested positive of marijuana use while they were employed at this center?
That's correct. Or for the county and to center. But and perhaps on my rebuttal, I'll cite that for you. But the point of the matter is...
Perhaps.
It's in the record. I'm sorry. But the point of the matter is, if I am bringing charges and I am lying in my presentation of the pre-termination charges, that fundamentally is a denial of due process, to bring something knowing it's not true. Then with respect to the appendix 22 and 23, Mr. Griffin went to the drug test for violating the policy of a drug-free workplace at the detention center. And then on appendix 23, they tie in the January 16th event. Mr. Griffin had no knowledge about the January 16th event on appendix page 22 before he came now. And when they put that portion of it, that is a new charge that comes in contemporaneous at this proceeding.
Did you raise this issue before the district court?
Absolutely. The KT allegation is anew. He had no knowledge of it. But what happened?
Well, can you raise it here then now if they are new?
No, it's not anew. It was anew.
Were they raised before the district court?
Yes, they are.
They were?
They were.
All right.
Let me get clarified in my mind what was raised and what was not raised. I'm still on this other people were working at the center who tested positive for marijuana who were not fired. Is that part of the record in the district court?
That's part of the record in the district court.
And in terms of your brief, because this was kind of news to me, I was just looking at your brief again. I don't see any reference to these other people in your brief before us, but I've just done a quick scanning again. I didn't recall reading anything about that.
In Martin Colgan's deposition testimony.
No, I mean in your brief here in front of us.
I don't have it in the brief.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry.
Ms. Nelson.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Nunnery. My name is Mary Nelson, and I appear on behalf of Otis Bennett and Jonathan Delagrave. I would like to address the last question presented to Mr. Nunnery at the beginning of my argument, and it has to do with the issue with respect to other employees, testing, discipline. I can tell you that was never raised as an argument or an issue on summary judgment or in any pleadings, and I'll be honest, Your Honors, it's news to me. I do recall it being addressed very briefly in her deposition, but that's it. It was never an issue. It was never briefed, and it certainly was not addressed by Judge Randa in his summary judgment decision. And I'll be honest, because of that, I'm not in a position to get into the details of that because it was a very small portion of her deposition. I think there were a couple of questions. But I think in generally responding to that suggestion of, I'm assuming at this point, of some unfair treatment, after Mr. Griffin's termination on January 27th, he didn't meet with one of the three union representatives who he had met with privately before that meeting. And it's my understanding, Your Honors, that the union representatives were contacted by the county to come and meet with him and attend the meeting with him that morning. If you recall, the only question they asked during that meeting was why termination. The explanation was given, the positive drug test. Mr. Griffin had testified in his deposition that subsequent to that, he had approached the union representative about essentially, is this something that the county could do in terms of termination? And the union representative confirmed, yes, this was an appropriate discipline. And if you also recall that, when everything happened over the course of really just a couple of days, we've got the request for the drug test on the 22nd. I believe there were two requests. Initially, Mr. Griffin refused. Then he agreed, and the test was done. He was advised that next day. So the test is administered on a Thursday. He's contacted by the medical review officer on Friday. The county learns about it on Monday. The meeting's on Tuesday. So it's just over the course of just a couple days.
Is your policy or has your policy about discharging someone for having tested positively been published before this incident?
It's my understanding it was, Your Honor.
As
a matter of fact,
policy.
Mr. Griffin knew that, and that was the point that I wanted to make, was
right.
That before we even got to the January 27th meeting, because keep in mind, Mr. Griffin, and there are a couple things, and so if I could just answer your question, but do it a little chronologically in terms of placing a couple things into context. In response to what Mr. Nunnery said, he talked about the fact that at the 27th, at the meeting on the 27th, Mr. Griffin didn't know why he was there or didn't know what the charge was. On page 16 of his deposition, when I asked him the question in terms of when he was originally or initially asked by Mr. Delagrave to take the test, he testified, "When I came in, he asked me to have a seat. I sat down, and basically he just told me, he said they had received some information regarding me using drugs in the workplace, and they had reason to believe that I was under the influence of marijuana. And then that's when he told me that I would have to go with him, be escorted out of the building by him and Dan, and taken to St. Mary's to do a drug test." Now, fast forward to the 27th in terms of the report that was completed and he signed, and it essentially reads, on January 22nd, 2004, Mr. Griffin went for a drug test that returned positive for an illegal controlled substance, therefore violating Racine County's policy of a drug-free workplace and Human Services Department Juvenile Detention Center drug and alcohol testing policy. On January 16, 2004, Deputy Superintendent Jonathan Delagrave received information that Mr. Delagrave was alleged to be engaging in illegal use of a drug substance while working in the detention center. And I'll stop there. My point is that the information Mr. Griffin had before he agreed to take the test was the same information he was given when he after he took the test and at the time of his termination. I see that my white light is on. And so he knew.
You've got time to continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. He knew what the explanation, what the reason was for the test. When the test came back positive, he was the very first one to know. He did nothing with respect to the union. He did nothing. I believe he testified that he may have tried to contact Mr. Delagrave, but then, of course, we're into the weekend. Did not contact the union, but he knew some form of discipline was going to occur up to and including termination. So if we talk about notice, he knew everything beforehand that actually occurred, and he knew that when he received the call from Mr. Bennett that morning, the 27th, that essentially his job may very well be on the line.
And whose words were those, that he knew his job was on the line?
I believe
from the deposition.
I believe that may have been Mr. Bennett's, in terms of the reason coming in. But even before Mr. Bennett called him that morning, Mr. Griffin knew that something was going to happen up to and including termination. A couple points I do want to make, because they were addressed in the brief in the briefs on summary judgment. There seemed to be an issue that I feel Judge Randa succinctly and took care of with respect to when the termination occurred. There was some suggestion by Mr. Griffin that maybe it was before the 27th. That was the cause of action pled in the complaint, that the termination was on January 27th. That was Mr. Griffin's testimony. Judge Randa wouldn't allow Mr. Griffin to somehow amend the complaint by way of the briefing. Judge Randa was correct with that decision. The central issue, the one issue that really brings us here today, has to do with the question of whether or not Mr. Griffin received his Loudermill hearing. And I believe under the clear holdings of Loudermill and even Staples, he did receive that notice. This court is very aware that the hearing does not need to be elaborate. It's an initial check against mistaken decisions, that there are reasonable grounds to believe the charges are true and support the recommended action. And keep in mind, Mr. Griffin never challenged that basis, either in terms of the reason given for the test when he was initially requested on the 22nd, and again when that was repeated and he was asked to explain on the 27th, never challenged it in any way, shape, or form. With respect to the issue of notice, there was no objection by Mr. Griffin or any of the union representatives that there was insufficient notice with respect to the January 27th meeting. There was no claim by Mr. Griffin or the union representatives that he was not in a position to respond. He went to that meeting knowing everything that he needed to know and knowing everything that occurred. The last point I do want to make has to do with an assertion in the brief that Mr. Griffin did not receive post-termination due process in terms of that being violated. Again, Judge Randa succinctly and very quickly took care of that one with respect to the fact that there was a grievance procedure available to Mr. Griffin, and under the law, his decision not to pursue the post-termination grievance procedure results in a waiver of any such claim in this case. Unless you have any other questions, Your Honors, I'll conclude my argument and respectfully request that you affirm Judge Randa's grant of summary judgment. Thank you for your time this morning.
How much time? One minute.
First of all, with respect to Staples, there was a number of cases cited in Staples that this court analyzed, and it looked at a number of intervening events from the time of the notice of the discharge. This is contemporaneous, oral, no notice. There was no intervening events from the 16th of January until the time of his discharge. Secondly, at the credibility issue, we believe the pay cut. When he came to the hearing, an inference can be drawn that he was terminated even at that time. Mr. Griffin was never told at the hearing, look, you're suspended without pay. Appendix 23, Mr. Randles says, look, you're on administrative leave. There is nothing in the personnel records or files identifying administrative leave. And what they found out.
Does it have to be in the record?
There ought to be something told.
It
doesn't have to be in the personnel records or files. But at least there is nothing. There's an inference to be drawn. He didn't even know he was off the payroll. The KT juvenile matter is a matter brought into this case on the 27th for the first time. It is a new issue. It is a new issue that was never cited. So what they did, they put something in the record notifying him of his termination without going over.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement. We move to